We're almost to the end, folks. Welcome to episode 40 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-by-episode guide to the final season of The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
Katie Burt is on assignment. But Jen, you're back.
I'm back.
All right, We Brave Three, welcome to our recap and review of Season 6, Episode 5, Why We Fight. And now that we're all together, I want to say right off the bat, before we do any kind of recapping, there's only one left. What the heck?
What in the frig is going to happen? I have no idea, except a big battle. I'm sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to smush all this into the last episode.
I don't feel like they're going to even try. I think that they're just going to leave stuff teased and unexplored until the possibility of future stories.
Yeah, movies is what my guess is. My completely uninformed and uneducated guess is that they're going to work a movie or two into this somehow, somewhere down the road.
I think just with the Laconia stuff or the ring, that feels like it could be a movie in and of itself. Like, oh, we teased it and now we'll come back to it.
I would welcome that because just honestly, after the season finale of season 3, when they didn't know if they were going to get picked back up again, it really tied things up kind of nicely. That last shot of Holden going through the ring, you know, you imagine the kinds of stories that could come in the future. I hate to say this, as much as I am enjoying this season, I hate to say, but I am more and more skeptical that I'm going to feel the same way after next week's episode.
I mean, I don't know how you multi-nuke with rocks Earth and then just kind of fizzles out in the last episode. If it's going to, I hope to be corrected on that, but will it fizzle out? I don't know. I like as you said, I feel more like that might be the case than I did 6 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, the last, like, both episodes 4 and 5 were so good and there was so much happening, but there's also things like, you know, Drummer and Avasarala teaming up that I'm like, oh, I want this to have more than one episode to play out, however it's going to play out. And well, and that's just one plot line. There's like probably 10 plot lines I could think of that I wish had a little bit more space. So they're going to finish it. It's just like having the room that I wish they had.
It's going to feel crammed even if they are stretching it out to something else, it's still going to be crammed because you got to finish some of the stuff off. Even if they don't beat Marcos, the Philip thing's somehow got to work itself out. Laconia's somehow probably going to work itself out. You know, various things here are going to have to work themselves out to some extent.
Like Marco to die, right?
Maybe, maybe he does something crazy and they move it on to something else. You know, like, to be continued. But
I guess that's what we want. But
yes, basically.
This war has to have some sort of, maybe not resolution, but
inflection point of some sort.
Yeah.
Where's an elevator shaft when we need it?
Exactly. It solves every problem.
we'll do the quick episode recap, and then we'll go back into our questions and conversation about this episode in detail. But I do think that the worst possible case scenario, and I don't think that they're going to do this, but what if they National Lampoon's Animal House this thing and you just have, like, moments and credits, you know, John Blutarsky became senator, you know, just stuff that teases the next three books and there you go.
That really only works with biopic-type stuff or
Praxis Plants saved the world.
I really hope they don't do that.
I know.
Oh, let's barrel through the recap real quick, and then let's talk about episode 5, Why We Fight, and move from there. On Laconia, where we spend all of about 2 minutes, Kara's hopes are fulfilled, and the strange dogs have brought her brother back to life. As the first sentient we've seen resurrected, we find out that he's not quite himself. He's distant, his skin and eye color have shifted, and he wants to know what to be in substrate means, and that's not creepy at all. No. Mm. The MCRN make good on their plans to attack Medina Station, only to be ripped apart by railguns mounted on the Ring Station. Marco uses the victory as a propaganda tool to offset Belter discontent, while planning to consolidate forces at Medina and control Ring space. The celebration on the Pella completely misses Philip, though, when he shares with Tadeo the news that Tadeo's brother died on Ceres. Tadeo confesses he helped bomb Ceres, thinking that there would be only inner deaths. And once more, Philip's got a lot to process. While Avasarala's advisors debate leaving Ceres behind and counterattacking, Jim and Naomi learn from Dr. Okoye on Illus that the ship disappearances in Ring space are connected. Holden thinks the, scare quotes, unknown aggressors are trying to get out into our world. Hilariously, he suggests to Avasarala that she and Inaros work together on the problem. Instead, she prevails on him to help form an alliance with Drummer. Drummer and the Tynan have brought their pirated supplies to Ceres as heroes. Drummer has no use for the Inners and is bitter at Naomi, who comes to try building bridges, but in the end, she and Christian meet in public. Drummer won't follow her orders, but they're on the same side, with a handshake that'll be seen across the solar system and somehow resolved in the next episode.
Or will it be?
Well, let's get back to that topic of conversation. You know, Laconia Station, the unknown aggressors, people getting resurrected on an alien planet. Are we going to be what is our likelihood of being satisfied about all of this with one more episode left in the Amazon series?
The resurrection part makes, in episode 5 of 6, is a bit of a red herring. You know, it's like, why didn't you bring this in episode 1 or 2? Like, unless you intend for this, because otherwise, what's it for, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've still got to wonder, why is it 6 episodes in the first place? Unless it's for more stuff happening later.
Yeah, I'm definitely starting to feel like a little nutty, because I'm like, is episode 6 going to air and they're immediately going to tell us, like, and there's a 6-part Laconia. Like, mm-hmm. I'm starting to get that, like, conspiracy theory behind the scenes.
Are we being gaslit?
Yeah, and I don't like
feel,
being
that's a good way to
like
put
that.
It. I'm getting expanse lit.
Yeah, I wish I didn't know that the series was about to conclude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd be quite so impatient with all of this necessarily. I think that there are ways to bring any story to a satisfying conclusion, whether it is a movie or just decisively tying off some plot threads.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mm-hmm. you've got your characters at the end saying, I still don't know what this means, but we'll figure it out. We've got, you know, something like that. And just, What's that line from Doctor Who? The song never ends.
This song is ending, but the song itself never ends. Yes.
Yeah.
From my favorite episode.
Sorry, couldn't resist. It seems pretty clear that this next episode is going to be maybe the final battle with Marco and Aros. Will that be enough for you, or is it just too early to tell?
What if Marco Inaros gets attacked by the unknown aggressors, thus setting up something else? Or then that makes it a truce between, you know, I'm just spitballing here.
I mean, it does feel like, yeah, we have these two alien, somewhat interrelated alien plot lines that have gotten almost no time. One is whatever's happening on Laconia, but the other thing is these ships just, yeah, disappearing, and they're trying to get into our world or whatever Holden says. And it's like, oh, I don't know. That does seem like a possible solution, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But
at the very least,
it seems a little too simple.
Yeah. At the very least, it's a massive tease for books 7, 8, and 9 of the series.
Mm-hmm.
There is a place that we can go for this stuff, which was not an option for George R. R. Martin's.
True.
So, yeah, maybe this has basically just been a six season prequel for 3 books. I don't know.
That's underwhelming. And then it just gives a big link on screen for the Amazon listings for those books at the end
right?
to see more.
Otherwise, this is a good episode. It is a dramatic episode with not a lot of pew pew pew, because this is the character stuff that builds up to the ultimate episode. And I want to spend some time with Christian Avasarala and everything that's happening to her in this episode. And we talked a little bit about the importance of one of the bonus clips that you only see if you look at the X-ray menu on the appropriate platform. So in one of those, we see Christian getting some bad news about her health. And if you've only been watching these episodes, this is the first time that you get a hint that something's going on. So I want to check that out with you all, and see both where you feel like Christian's going, both in terms of her physical health in the story and how you feel like that's being addressed in the story. And also a bit of a morality check, because we talked about her earliest appearances on this show about how she had a belter out of his water tank on hooks, literally torturing him for information. And along the way, we started being okay with her. And the show finally actually resolves that as part of the text of the thing. So let's do a Christian check here.
Well, when they got to that part where she is even bringing up the fact that she tortured this guy, it wasn't even that she, like, really ordered. It wasn't like, oh, I'm ordering it. It was like, that's how we were introduced to her, just, like, being in the room. And so it's one of those things where I feel like, as an American, I'm often on the side of, you know, I'm not on the side, but my government is torturing people my name, just a lot in my lifetime. And there's a lot of politicians who I probably would never feel sympathy for in real life. But watching her plot line and her arc over the series, it's like, I do believe that she has changed and become like a more morally good person. Like, I think this person she is now might still torture someone, but it would really have to be her last resort. And I do think she's able to see other people's humanity more.
She's also lost a lot since then too, right? Like, she lost her husband and a ton of land masses on the earth.
Like, to not be changed by that. But I guess that some people still, like, double down on the cruelty or just justifying certain things as a means to an end.
As you've seen with a lot of the military people around her.
Yeah.
Don't take the American thing too hard, because you never hear about it, because nobody cares about Canadian news. But we had Special Forces guys do similar stuff in Afghanistan. So you're not all, you know, you're not to blame anyway. But also, Canada's not as innocent as it makes itself out to be. I would say this is maybe in my head, and maybe from reading like the first 10 pages or so of the original book. I think way back when, but I had it in my head that when they first showed a belter, they had unusually long arms, and that was a thing in the book, that they were more stretched out as people because of the low gravity, and they just kind of brushed that aside because it's almost impossible to pull off regularly. There was more othering of the belters in the beginning than there is now. Like, once you got to know the belters, as an audience, you're not going to put up with that crap either, right? So, because, you know, you've got favorite characters, like, I think drummers, everybody's, if not their favorite, top three, right? And she's and she's a belter, so you're just not going to put up with that crap, audience-wise, I think, at this point. And they know it. And also, it's good to show progression of this character, too.
A side note about that belters having long arms or whatever. I remember some interview with someone, maybe they were saying they were just going around Toronto being like, you are tall and have long limbs. Would you like to be on the show?
Because the guy who was torturing
in
the show did look like that, as I recall.
But at a certain point, they were just like, we can't only cast people based on this physical type.
Doug Jones has a very long schedule.
He's very busy. He's extremely busy.
Yeah. I mean, you saw that with Kara G's physiognomy, and to a certain extent, Thomas Jane's. You know, whether
and Naomi
they were
too.
Shot. I mean, and how they're shot, but they concentrate on that a lot more in the early going. And I think it actually serves the story a little bit in the sense that the whole point is that the Belters should not be othered, that Earth, Mars, and the Belt have common interests and need to forge common ground. And so there's a lot less work on othering in terms of the physical characteristics of the Belters. You still have the accent and the language doing a lot of work.
Also, Marco is, even if he isn't short, is the essence of short man syndrome. he just comes off as that, even if he isn't short. So, on a complete aside, I love that every time you look at a monitor, the thing on a Belter monitor says "show dat ting." I just love that. That's the nomenclature for turn this on or whatever it means.
Yeah, but getting back to Christian, you know, I think that is. I think that. It's good that the show is finally sort of naming that right from the beginning. She is still a morally complex gray character. She wonders if she's gone soft, and Bobby gives her what for. Which, you know, we would have welcomed that softening back in at the beginning of the first season. And I think these are characters, and I think Holden's in that same category, who are trying to figure out the right thing to do, and balancing short term versus long term, and trying to figure out what sacrifices are beyond the pale in the short term, like abandoning Ceres, which they fortunately that the urgency of that is reduced somewhat with Pirate Kamina coming to the rescue. This is a great episode for Kara G and Kamina Drummer. Let's talk about where she is in all this thing, including the reunion with Naomi and the first meeting with Christian and just the whole totality of it.
It's a showcase, basically. She gets a lot to work with all over the map with this thing, like the geopolitics and the emotions and Naomi and Chris, all that stuff. You know, she just, Kara G is just, they go, here's an episode, do what thou wilt. And she does.
Her polyam Belter fam is completely lost by this point. And she's got to deal with that too.
Yeah.
It was really heartbreaking. That scene that she has with Michio, where she's talking to her about, you know, why they're leaving each other, basically. And, the line about, you know, I fell in love with you because you were I wanted to build something and you were builders. Oh, it's just like, wow. She has really been through it. Like, there's also another side point where she mentions that she had to regrow her spine. And she's like, you can regrow an arm. And you're like, oh, yeah. Like, she spent, like, a season, like, regrowing her spine and in like extreme pain. And
am
was
I
still
the only
like,
person?
Yeah.
You thought of Deadpool too when you saw that guy's arm?
Oh, yeah.
Totally. Okay, good. I'm not the only one.
Oh, but it's just like, oh. And so when she finally gets to talk to Naomi, it's like there's the intense political pressure, but also just as friends, her being able to be like, oh, this is to really break down. Because she's been through so much, and even as much as that her polyam Belter fam is her family, she seems like she's had to be strong for them, and Naomi seems like someone she can break down in front of to an extent.
I gotta say, from a practical standpoint, flying into battle with your polyam Belter fam is just, that's multiple points of possible failure, which have now happened, right?
Yeah. So
as opposed to just going with a bunch of hardened Marines or something who, you know, are there to fight and that's it. Like, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying this is just an added level of pain she's going to have to deal with. So, and has now at this point.
So Naomi walks onto that ship and is the personification of compromise. And Kamina just can't handle it. Mm-hmm. And that is a tour de force right there. The combination of just sort of clutching each other in a hug while Kamina is repeating F you, F you, F you.
That was great.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was so good.
Wow.
But that's acting too. Like somebody, a lesser acting. Actor would screw that. No, but you know what I mean? Like a lesser actor would screw that up. It mm-hmm. takes a very nuanced portrayal to do that properly.
Mm-hmm. Those two were just giving so much to that scene.
Yeah.
It was so impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared to see Kamina so cold to Naomi.
She calls her Nagata.
Yeah.
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 I mean,
I gasped, I think, when she did that.
I mean, there was serious, Holden aside, there was serious shipping material between those two characters. And for it to be so cold at that point,
mm-hmm.
And Kamina's absolutely been through it. The station manager, they're so cutting to Kamina. I think they said something about Kamina being on the inner's leash or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, all of that stuff on Kamina's shoulders like a bag, like a big bag of rocks. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. to face your friend who's hanging out with the Secretary General.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about the on the leash thing was that was the person who runs the station, and they're stuck mm-hmm. in a line like everybody else. So that was kind of cool from that mm-hmm. sense, too, because you see them just sitting there in line going, oh, I'm stuck doing this now. And then she just waltzes on by me. So I get where the bitterness came from, too, on top of the political stuff. As far as the shipping goes, I thought that was canonical, but that could just be in my head.
I think it's canonical. Yeah, I think so.
I think that... One last point about that scene at the screening line.
Hmm.
Obviously, the Belters are not a monolith. So the station manager goes after Kamina, just before that, the Belter behind Kamina says, "Don't mess around with this. You've got stuff to do."
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. It's nice and practical of them too.
Yeah, so I really dig that at every level, maybe slightly less so with Mars, although we do get a whole side story in season five about or season four, excuse me, of Gunrunner Bobby Draper and the conflict between Mars factions. For the most part, None of these factions are monoliths. This isn't mm-hmm. Star Wars Empire versus Rebels stuff.
No.
Yeah. One of the other things I liked about that line scene is it's not that long of a line. Like, it's not that necessarily that they're going to be wasting their time in line. I think it's more of this, like, indignity that mm-hmm. they have to be, you know, subject to questioning and search by Inners. And she gets to get around that, right? Like...
Mm-hmm.
They're not asking her questions, even though she is kind of going to a meeting where she gets people ask her questions, right? But what they see is like, oh, you get to avoid this. I like that it wasn't a ridiculously long line.
So this ultimately leads to the very first scene we've ever had of Shoresh and Kara working together on a single soundstage. And that meeting, that iconic handshake. Christian humbles herself as much as Christian actually can humble herself.
Yeah.
Which is at a 75 as opposed to 100 probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And drummer's not giving anything up, you know.
No.
There is no real cost that is extracted from drummer except maybe to her own pride.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a big deal, frankly.
Yeah. It, very much so, but, you know, we will not take orders from you. I wouldn't expect it. Handshake. if there were flash bulbs in the Expanse technology, they'd be popping all over the place. I think I think Monica was on the balcony-ish watching the whole thing. You know that this was covered.
I was main thought that went through my head when I saw it, I was like, oh, get ready for an ass whooping, because that's what's coming, Marco.
One only hopes.
I would not want to be on the other side of those two women.
No, I wouldn't know either of them to begin with. I wouldn't want to together, forget it. Like,
exactly.
No. Yeah.
I can just imagine, you know, we've seen the Instagram pictures of the actors behind the set, you know, in the dressing room, and, you know, that amazing energy between them. But you know that these actors have been waiting for this scene for years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
When do we get to have a scene together? When do we get to have a scene together? Here you are.
I was a little worried for Ava Sorrell as she was walking through that. I'm like, oh, somebody's going to shoot her. Please don't really shoot her. Please, please, no shooting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was worried about the same thing. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I was just also going to say, sometimes it's easy to forget that when you imagine that these people exist in the same world, you forget, like, oh, they haven't interacted. And these actors probably don't even interact that much. Like, they're probably there on, especially with COVID.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, good point. Yeah.
You know, and with Kara Gee filming all of her scenes last year is like within like whatever 2 weeks or whatever ridiculous time frame she did all that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So loads and loads of stuff set up to make me really anticipate the next episode and all of this stuff, because really the heart of it is the conflict with the Free Navy. Speaking of which, let's check in with, you know, there's not much to say about the father of the year and the manager of the year in this episode. It's all kind of set up for he'll presumably have a very big role next time. But Philip, so end of episode 4, he's leading a chant in support of his dad. And then this man is a human yo-yo, and the yo-yo is at the bottom of the string spinning helplessly right now, as he finds out from Tadeo that it wasn't the Inners who killed people on Ceres.
Man, talk about... I do want to talk about Philip, but the actor that plays Tadeo, great job. Like, first of all, he just does a great job of being like a believable, comforting friend to Philip for a lot of this.
A good dude, basically.
A good dude. He's just a good dude. And so then when he delivers that information about he thought he was, you know, there wasn't going to be any collateral damage or belt or death, and he ended up killing his brother. That was like the biggest, like, heartbreaking scene in this episode. And there was some heartbreaking stuff in here.
Yeah, that's actor Joe Perry, and he knocked that out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it really, for you to believe, or for me to believe, that Philip is kind of waffling, he needs someone in his life that is going to kind of pull him towards something else. And, you know, his mother was never going to be that, because he's just been poisoned against her, right? So having a character who is, you know, fighting on the same side as him, who is kind of giving him a little bit more of a nuanced idea of how the world works, makes Philip's arc a little, wherever it's going, I still don't know where it's going, but I believe that he is questioning, and he would question these things.
The other thing is that 20-year-olds, especially males, are generally yo-yos, because they don't know anything about anything. That's why they're recruited to the military, because they're easily to mold. And then when you've got somebody who's like that and has, you know, some dictator for a dad, I mean, basically you got Donald Trump Jr., except nice, or nicer anyway.
Yeah.
Which is not much of a contest. But that's kind of the situation he finds himself in.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, agreed. He could still go anyway. His future direction is one that I presume the book readers know and we don't. Mm-hmm. But he could take over the Free Navy and in the future and be just the same kind of megalomaniac. Yeah. He could take out his dad. And then what happens? It's really fascinating because his character arc in this season is increasing conflict, but not increasing direction.
Mm. That's an excellent way to put it. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you said, he's a yo-yo.
Which is why it's still compelling to watch him. I'm not like frustrated that it hasn't, he hasn't chosen a path, because I do think it's like, well, that's probably realistic, right?
Yeah, he's a rock and a hard place no matter what he does.
Yeah. He's extraordinarily malleable, but he's still made of stern stuff. And he is willing to, he's still, you know, the same person who was willing to kill his own mother a couple of episodes ago, you know, and that makes it all the more unpredictable where he's going to go. But they've done all the good stuff to sort of seed the fact, you know, it's not whichever way he goes, there will have been a track record of stuff to point to that's going to take him in that direction. Yeah. I want to talk about, they don't get much time this episode, but Amos and Bobby at the bar.
Look, glitter. Glittergate.
Glittergate.
I loved how much glitter they had put on West Chatham. They didn't skimp. It was great.
Part of me wants to know how that glitter got there, and a big part of me doesn't want to know how that glitter got there.
They don't need to really go into it. We can figure it out.
Yeah.
Amos would tell you. Without blinking.
True, so that's why I'm not asking.
But it's a space for them to have a conversation about Holden, who we'll get to in a minute. But Amos tells Bobby the reason why the torpedo didn't go off, and her reaction to that was not exactly what I would have expected. Mm-hmm. And they get into this conversation about what they expect out of the people who they're on the line with. And was Bobby just too accepting of this is the sort of thing that Holden does? Was the case that she made for why Amos should go back to the ship, compelling enough for Amos? I kind of think so, to the latter. Not sure about the former.
She strikes me as more of a table flipper than this, basically. Yeah. Although she did all her table flipping with Avicerala, so maybe not. Maybe she's just, I'm done. I've had enough of this nonsense. I'm just guessing here, but.
No, I definitely was surprised. I remember at one point when, a previous episode when it's like, I was just like, no one tell Bobby. Like, just don't tell Bobby.
Yeah.
Because I just was like, she will not be able to see Holden's side. You know?
Right.
But, I mean,
if she's on the Rossi next episode, I can see her telling Holden, you will give me total fire control, right?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah.
And then calling him on it or saying, like,
yeah.
Or like during the heat of battle saying, get the hell out of my face, I'm shooting this thing, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as far as Amos's struggle.
I mean, I love that this has been this consistent thing of he's like, I think I need someone to show me what's good. Mm-hmm. And now I am just so damn confused, like, at this point. Like, oh.
And this is not the time to get confused. People are throwing rocks at Earth. That's a pretty solid reason to not be confused, frankly.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. And that conversation comes back to good old Holden, our great man of the story, who is when he has the conversation with Dr. Okoye and with Naomi about what they've discovered about what's going on with the ring, and he goes to a place that he's been in previous episodes of this show, it's consistent with his character. This is bigger than the war. I'm like, oh, you sweet summer child.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Right?
And then he literally does go to Christian and start to suggest that, you know, we've got to share this with Naros. We've got to get to a ceasefire so we can deal with this. And that just ain't happening.
No.
Jim Holden, what is with you? And why does the show... make him that sort of idealistic figure?
And it's a little late for that, frankly. It's a little late for the show, and it's a little late during the war for that to happen.
Well, I also think that... I think, potentially, if Holden didn't know about Marco as much on a personal level through Naomi, maybe there's one way to believe, like, oh, someone on that is my enemy could potentially see this. But he knows about Marco's character on, like, such a deep level that to believe in his willingness to make a good move for the greater good of humanity, or even just for the belt, you know, just it's a little hard to buy.
I mean, for the duration of this show, Holden has always been more concerned about the protomolecule and the weird, unearthly stuff related to it, and then to the ring and the stuff on Illus, way more than anybody else in the show. So
sure
it is
been
kind
right
of consistent
most of the time too. So.
Yeah, and he has probably the most knowledge, of firsthand knowledge of this stuff. So maybe he expects other people to have that same fear, maybe, or prioritizing.
Also, they've been in his head, right? And
yeah.
Nobody else, or maybe this kid on who nobody knows about on what the hell's it called again? Laconia. I wanted to call it Leviathan of the first book for some reason. Anyway,
right?
Yeah. So that kid's about the only person that we know of. I guess Miller too has gone through all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty small pool of people.
To some
extent.
Oh,
yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which we did predict that we were going to be seeing her, and that's
cool. That
was cool.
Good. That was good. I'm all for these Zoom cameos they're doing.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, he knows more about the plot of The Expanse than any other characters in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not exactly meta, but, you know, there needs to be a character out there who's got a sense of which direction the story is going in, and that's kind of his role. I did seeing Okoye again and having the conversation about the stuff that was happening on Illus. I'm sure it didn't like redeem season four for you as such, but I just liked having a little bit more connective tissue there. And just really connecting to that story, it does make it kind of redeems it for me. But then again, I never really hated season four.
I never hated it either. I just thought it was kind of a lull compared to the other ones.
Yeah. It's nice to be reminded the breadth of this world, considering in some ways the season has been kind of more focused. Even though, obviously, you have all these factions. And I think when I do read the books, I think I'm looking forward to the Illus stuff, because I think there's probably a lot in the book that just didn't translate to screen for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. I hear you there. So, as you said, Jen, this whole season has been... it's been really kind of grimy boots on the ground stuff. It's been tied to the solar system. It's the Free Navy versus Earth and Mars. We've been spending time on Ceres. We've been spending just enough time on Laconia to whet the appetite for stories that may never come. And we just spent our only time of the season in ring space outside looking at Medina Station. I'll be fascinated to see, you know, did they keep the sets for Medina Station? I have no idea.
Yeah.
The core story here in the solar system, I continue to be really satisfied about.
Oh, yeah.
Any other thoughts about Season 6, Episode 5?
How the hell are they going to finish this thing? Which isn't about Episode 5, but that is my main thought going out of Episode 5. Is what are they going to do to finish this thing?
I know. I'm really not sure. But, it has been such a strong... I will say it's been such a strong season. These last two episodes were two of my... Really high up there on, you know, best Expanse episodes, you know?
Go ahead.
Oh, no. So I'm just excited. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know. But I mostly just hope that we get some resolutions with some of our core characters. That's really all I want. And a cool space battle. That'd be nice, too.
Yeah, I think we're kind of guaranteed that one.
Oh, yeah, easy. I think my season anxiety has got less, should be separated from the actual season happening, because there's me worrying about what they're going to do, and then there's them just doing it. So those are two separate things, right?
Yeah.
Where does the Expanse go from now? I'm sure we will discuss that in great detail next time. When we talk about Babylon's Ashes, which is the final episode of The Expanse as we know it. Hopefully, Katie will return from her assignment, and four of us will be able to sort of look at that episode and the series as a whole. And then we'll probably take a break and then come back, having actually read the books that you have been grinding your teeth about us all along.
We'll answer all our questions.
Yeah, we're planning on taking a little
seasons.
Break and coming back to that.
Because that's where we're starting from,
presumably. All right. But in the meantime, please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter. You can find us on the Incomparable Network. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back soon. Until then.
All we can do is stand by the people that we love. What else is there?
We're not going to continue that with Kamina's response because it's a family podcast. Take care, everybody.